Kitchener Today with Brian Burke on 570 News.
Maneesa Sheikh, he is a managing partner with Levitt LLP, and joins us this afternoon. It's kind of an interesting way to handle things, isn't it?
It certainly is. And from the employer's perspective, it's easy to understand why they would want to incentivize non-smoking employees. I mean, outside of the fact that we have many companies across North America who are now jumping on the bandwagon, and I mean that in the best possible way, to advocate for a healthier lifestyle in the workplace, maybe by offering health and wellness classes, perhaps by starting, running groups within the workplace, offering healthy options for those who prepare meals in the workplace. All of that sounds great, but this is going one step further, in that you're essentially trying to incentivize people who are not smoking. And keep in mind, this is an affordable, 100% legal, and highly addictive substance in the workplace. So are the smokers feeling shortchanged? Probably in more ways than one. They absolutely are.
It's we are a selfish people, I find. We will do things if it pays off for us personally, which I think we all know. When we raise our children, we just tend to forget that when we become adults. So that kind of incentive is far more powerful, I think, than anything else.
Which is kind of unfortunate, because look, there's always pros and cons with everything. So, I mean, it's unfortunate in the sense that what you largely have are, individuals who are largely addicted to smoking in the workplace. And sometimes, the employees at policies like this target are those who are the lower income earners, oftentimes doing general labor. And a similar argument had come up last week with U-Haul, who was also offering an incentive to their non-smokers. And the question then becomes is, although, what will people do for a buck? The question becomes, are they doing it for the right reasons? And from a socioeconomical standpoint, and this is perhaps a thing that no one wants to talk about, are we going to be in a situation where we're going to have employees who aren't earning that much money who are now worrying about yet another roadblock? So if they're one of the employees who are not smoking, do they only not get the incentive, or is it some bias that's going to be implemented throughout the workplace, maybe in some other way? Because U-Haul, as I had mentioned last week, announced in the U.S. that they're implementing a policy whereby they're just not going to hire non-smokers anymore. So the question becomes, how far can an employer really go? I guess that's a question for me, isn't it?
Yeah, that is really the question. How far can an employer go? Obviously, if you want to make the decision that you're not going to hire smokers, that's fine. Do you not hire people who eat too much?
Well, it's a good question that you ask. And I think in terms of how far employers will go, from a Canadian legal framework perspective at least, we have to look at our human rights legislation. So let's assume for a moment that U-Haul in Canada was to implement a policy like this. The problem, firstly, is that any policy that is not applied company-wide and is not applied to anyone is not good from an employee morale perspective. So I'll tell you what I mean by that. So by using U-Haul as an example, they had said that, we're not going to hire anybody who's a smoker. However, their policy is not going to affect the people who are still working there, who are currently working there, and are smokers. So that in and of itself is problematic. And then secondly, the question becomes, well, what's the reason for the smoking? Is it something that you're doing recreationally? And perhaps if it is something that you're doing recreationally, if you want the job bad enough, it's that ugly habit that you can put aside. But keep in mind, again, this is a purely legal and highly addictive substance we're talking about. And more often than not, when we look at smokers, I certainly don't have the stats, but I know that we're talking about people who are largely addicted. So here in Canada, if the question came to me from one of my employer clients, and they said, well, Maneesa, we want to implement a policy where, we want to either incentivize our non-smokers, or we don't even want to hire anyone moving forward who's not smoking, I would say be extremely careful, because if your employees are able to make the legal position that somehow the smoking is attributed to high stress, inability to cope with perhaps some sort of health condition that they might have. I mean, I'm not saying it's the easiest nexus to draw, but I'm also not telling you it's impossible. Then that might trigger a human rights complaint. So is something like this going to fly in Canada? Not yet.
Well, and then see, I've asked myself some interesting questions sometime and look at this and say, well, why is the company doing it? Is it because they truly and deeply care about all their employees, or is it because it gives us a little bit of a boost in productivity. And if that's the case, I certainly have known people in the past who don't take whatever their prescribed 15-minute break is. They're just those kinds of people. And do we reward that?
So I think, in fairness, I think it's probably a combination of both. I mean, ultimately, we are looking at employers who, rightfully so, are looking at their bottom line. And so productivity probably has a lot to do with it, particularly in that UK case that we're speaking about now, where I think the employer in that case had done the math on what all those smoke breaks amount to. And I think it came out to something like 16 days per year, which is a pretty staggeringly high number. But I think on the other hand, I think some of it does have to do with really trying to promote that health and wellness within the workplace, which is all great. And on the one hand, is great from an employee morale perspective. But on the other hand, if you're targeting those employees who may not necessarily have the resources to quit smoking, you know, it's not necessarily about going out and buying kale or getting, a Fitbit to monitor how many steps you're taking per day and all of that everybody, seems to agree with and everybody's excited about. But when you're talking about implementing policies that really malign one particular group of people, and again, from a socioeconomic perspective, people who may not have the financial resources to get the education or the health resources that they need to really understand how bad smoking is for them, I think that's targeting that simply isn't fair.
And just to go back a little bit, there is no one in this world excited by kale. I just want to correct
you. You're talking to the one girl who actually does love kale. So there you go.
But when I talked about the productivity thing, I kind of meant this. Okay, so if you're a person who's taking, 10 smoke breaks a day, and it's five minutes per smoke break, that's 50 minutes a day. There are other people in the office who are wasting 50 minutes a day another way.
Right.
So isn't that unfair?
It absolutely is unfair, but again, you have to look at it from the perspective of the person who's smoking. So ultimately, you're right. If we're looking at it tit for tat, if we're looking at it, for five minutes, what does it amount to throughout the day? Is it 50 minutes? Is it 45 minutes? Absolutely, from a productivity standpoint, you have other individuals who are potentially wasting the day and maybe do need that boost. The problem is when you're looking at it from the perspective of the smoker, if they're a recreational smoker who's out there just to chit chat and, shoot the breeze with their friends or, work colleagues, that's a different story. But when you're talking about individuals who may very well be addicted, and then you're treating people who are not addicted in a different way, what I'm suggesting is, at least here in Canada, on this side of the border, it could definitely trigger a human rights complaint. But look, if there's no human rights issues being raised and the employees are not complaining, then from a productivity standpoint, from an employee morale standpoint, if the employers want to give it a shot, why not?
We really do seem to be getting to that point of the idea, like you mentioned, the U-Haul case, or they're not going to hire smokers anymore.
Yes.
That seems to be coming more and more down the road.
It does. It most certainly does. But as I've said multiple times, we have human rights legislation in Canada that, at least in my view, is unparalleled when looking at human rights legislation in any country of the world. And with that, brings, certain obligations on the part of employers. So where we're talking about, being addicted to a legal yet toxic substance in the workplace, and where the employee can somehow demonstrate that it's related to potentially some health condition, you may have a problem as an employer. But again, advocating for health and wellness in the workplace, it's all great. The question becomes, when do you cross the line in terms of it becoming more big brother versus advocating for a healthy lifestyle in the workplace, and at the same time increasing productivity in a business that belongs to you?
So we've certainly had some employers who've talked about the use of cannabis during office hours. What's the difference?
Well, with cannabis, I think, outside of the obligation to allow people to use substances that are legal, there's also obligations on the part of the employer to ensure that all of their other employees are safe as well. So in this province, for instance, we have the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which clearly ensures that you have an obligation as an employer to ensure all of your employees are safe. So that does tend to give employers a little bit more wiggle room. And if they can successfully make the case that using cannabis somehow may hinder your judgment or your ability to do your job, particularly in a way that may hinder the safety of other employees, that's a pretty big difference versus someone having to put up with that cigarette stench off of their fellow colleagues.
So it would make a dramatic difference, of course, if all of a sudden governments got onto it and said, you know what, we're just going to ban cigarette smoking. We're making it illegal. That would be the tipping point, right?
Absolutely, it would be the tipping point. But, I mean, the question becomes, how long would that last? I mean, that's what we dealt with marijuana for how many years? And then before it became legal, there was this gray area for employers that spoke specifically to medicinal marijuana, where you had employees coming in saying, hey, I know this is an illegal substance, but, you know, here's a doctor's note, a comprehensive doctor's note that says I can use it. But again, it's about balancing the interest between what is legal, what is an accommodation, and what might potentially affect the health and safety of individuals who are not controlling the substance. So can we expect to see that sort of interesting narrative around cigarette smokes in the, you know, unlikely event that things become illegal on this side of the border? Most certainly.
That's a slight aside. Are we still working through workplace issues and cannabis?
You know what? I would say yes, for the most part. I can tell you that when cannabis became legal, I mean, at least at our firm, and we represent a number of employer clients, you know, they were emailing us in a frenzy saying, what does this mean? What does this mean for other employees? Particularly, what does this mean for those employees who are operating machinery, and really looking to see that, is this, you know, a blanket legalization that completely hinders your ability as an employer to run your business in a manner that you see fit? And in some cases, it did, and in some cases, it didn't. So I think even now we get the odd question that relates to a policy that may relate to marijuana use in the workplace and the ability for employees to use it, you know, recreationally outside of the workplace, and how it might affect their ability to do their job. But for the most part, with the sweeping legalization of marijuana came a discussion all across the board. I mean, you couldn't turn on the TV during, you know, in the month, 3 months leading up to the legalization, where you could, you know, where everybody wasn't talking about it, from our federal to provincial government, with various workshops being run for employers across the workplace. But yes, it's a live issue, but I think, you know, there was a lot of resources that were offered to employers and employees.
Well, it did come in handy as a topic. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely it did. And I got to tell you, we're pretty busy at our firm too.
Vanessa, thank you so much for your time.
Always a pleasure to be on. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Kitchener Today with Brian Burke on 570 News.